Morning, everyone. On today's Daf in the Dharma is Daf Lamed. We are on the bottom of Chav Tes Amid Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is on Zech Nishmach Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. And we find ourselves in the beginning of a discussion, but really it's a beginning of a discussion that comes off of yesterday's Gemara. So just quickly to review. The Mishnah taking us all the way back to Chav Ches Amid Aleph describes a scenario where a person is makdish his fruit on his tree until they're cut down. So the lashon of the Mishnah is achik sosu. So I'm sorry, carbon. Here nitios ha'elu carbon achik sosu. The Mishnah on the bottom of Chachas Amad Aleph says that these saplings are going to be kadosh. They're going to be a carbon until I cut them down. Or talis carbon achitisarfa, the talis is going to be carbon until it gets burnt. So ein lehem pidyon. The language of the Mishnah is that there is no pidyon, that you cannot redeem them. To which, as we already pointed out, that's very difficult to understand. How could you not redeem them? Meaning, even though they were sanctified and you consecrated them, but nevertheless, they only have kedushas damim. They only have value kedusha. They don't have intrinsic kedusha. So it's certainly redeemable. What would the Mishnah say? That Einlam Pidyon, that you can't redeem, that's very difficult to understand. So, as we learned yesterday, there are two opinions amongst the Amoraim. There is Barpada and there is Ula. Barpada is of the opinion that what the Mishnah means when it says Einlam Pidyon is as follows. When you stipulated and you said that they're going to be consecrated, I'm going to be makdish them until I cut them down, what you meant to say is the following. They're going to continuously be kadosh until I cut them down. What does that mean, continuous? It means that if I redeem them, the redemption, of course, is fine. Meaning that I transfer the kedusha of the fruit onto the money. But then what happens subsequently is that a new kedusha comes and now takes its place. Because when I said ashik tzotza, what I meant was I want them to be in a continuous state of kedusha until I cut them down. Once I cut them down, no, they're no longer in a continuous state of kedusha, and that means then that once I cut them down, so then I can redeem them, and I only have to redeem them one time. That would be enough. That's Barpada's understanding of the Mishnah. Then the Gemara quoted Ula. Ula's understanding of the Mishnah is no. When the Mishnah says ashik tzotza, what he means is I want there to only be a temporary kedusha on the fruit of that tree, meaning that even though he was makdish lizman. He was only sanctifying it for a finite period of time. And the big chiddush of Ula is you could do that. That in of itself is a big chiddush, that when you imbue something with kedusha, you can do so for a limited time, for a temporary period of time. And that's exactly what he's doing. So when the Mishnah says Ein Lahem Pidyon, the way Ula understands the Mishnah, turns the Mishnah on its head. Ein Lahem Pidyon means you don't need to redeem the fruit because once you cut them off the tree, that's it. The kedusha is gone because you only imbued it with a temporary kedusha. If you want to redeem it while it's on the tree, you can certainly do that. And once you do that, so then that's it. The fruit loses its kedusha. But the big chiddush of the Mishnah is that you can be makdish lizman. That's Ula's understanding. Yesterday, just to wrap up a review of what we saw yesterday, subsequent machlokas between Abai and Rava within the position of Ula. Ula teaches us this very novel idea that you can be makdish lizman, that you can give something temporary kedusha. Is that true for kedushas damim? Is that also true for kedushas aguf? So that we saw yesterday was a machlokas between Abai and Rava, and that goes back to yesterday's daf. Okay. What? Well, it's not true with everything that we're going to be talking about today, where it's not true with marriage. You can't temporarily marry somebody, so it's not true with every form of kedushin. Even, right, as we discussed this yesterday, even the position that says that you could be makdish lizman even by a kedusha taguf, we're going to still make some sort of segregation between that and marriage. Marriage by its definition is a permanent institution. So you can't be makdish a woman and say, you know, let's be married for a day, maybe a week, you know. That doesn't work that way. So it doesn't. To how far are we going to go with this chiddush? I mean, that's you know, that goes back to yesterday.
The fruit that I'm going to bring out for the radio, and I pull out the money. The fruit that I leave in Haifa, I can't touch that fruit anymore.
If it's connected to the tree, it has kedusha.
No, when I take it off the tree, because I take it off and I put it into money. And now I go to
Israel,
use the money in
Israel,
and then what happens?
No, hold on. Well, let's talk after, and I'll try to clarify the point after. Yeah.
Can you be makdish fruit that wasn't existence.
Right. So when he, right, that's a classic discussion of the Makdish Davar Shel Bala Olam. So it could very well be that the saplings had the fruit on them already. But I mean, saplings don't normally do that. I just planted a tree in my backyard. I understand. But okay. Right, that's the right question. Can you? It's a machlokas tanaim between Rav Meir and the Chachamim whether a person could be makdish davar shel bala olam. So, okay, I didn't see a discussion on the daf about that, but that's the right question to ask. Okay, we are on Chavtes Amid Beis, and we're about to start our daf, and it starts with a discussion. Gemara sets us up in a classic way. Yosef Rav Avin Rav Yitzchak Brebi, Kamed Rav Yirmia. So the way that the Gemara sets us up is that there was a discussion between Amarayim, Rabbi Avin, and Rav Yitzchak, and the discussion was being had in front of Rav Yirmia, the Kamed Namnim Rav Yirmia. Now Rav Yirmia at the time was half paying attention, and the other half he was dozing off. Okay, so Rav Yirmia was with one ear listening, and with the other ear he was taking a nap. Yosef Vekamri, and their discussion went like this: Libar Pada Damar Pod Nachos V'Sukedushos. So the Gemara says that, you know, in my review I said that Ula is a big chiddush. Truth of the matter is Bar Pada is also a big chiddush, because let's examine Bar Pada's viewpoint once again. Bar Pada says that when you were initially consecrated your fruit on the sapling tree, so you said they're going to remain kiddush until they get cut off. Okay, what happens in the interim? So again, I know I just said in the beginning of the shiur today, but let's focus on this point. What happens is that I redeem them. Then what happens? The Kedusha jumps back again. Okay, that's interesting. Meaning the Kedusha jumped back again. I wasn't actively makdish it after I redeemed it. That Kedusha jumped back again based on my original declaration. So you see how powerful my original declaration was? My original declaration can imbue it with Kedusha, not only the first time, but after every single time that I redeemed it. Even though I didn't do a new act of Hekdesh, I didn't make a new declaration, it always will come and be Kedush again based on my original declaration. That's a Chiddush. And to that the Gemara says, now let's see if we could take this Chiddush and let's see how far we can go with this Chiddush. So, live by part of Damar Panim Chosos V'Kedushos, Tifshot Debar Revoshia. Gemara says, you know, based on this, let's see if we can resolve a question that was asked by Revoshia. The question of Revoshia goes like this. I know it's the Prutos Laisha. Let's say a man goes over to a woman and says, look, I'm interested. I'm interested in marriage. And not only am I interested in marriage, I'm interested in marriage two times with you. What does that mean? So he says, I know it's the Prutos. So he gives her two Prutos and he says as follows, Laisha. V'amala ba'achas is kashili hayom. He says, look, once for today, meaning I'm going to be Mekadosh you today. But also, I like to think long term, meaning it could very well be that this marriage may or may not work. Who knows? Let's even entertain that it doesn't work. But in other words, but I'm willing to go at a second try. And you know what? I'm going to give you now a second pruta now, and I want the second pruta now to be effective so that you'll Mekadosh me a second time afterwards with the money that I give you right now, even though right now we're still on marriage number one. I mean, we just started marriage number one, but can I now give you a pruta for marriage number two? Now, I know this sounds odd, and obviously, you know, it doesn't forecast to be a great marriage, but again, I'm not interested in the social experiment over here. We're interested in the halachic application of this principle, where, again, look at the parallel now. In the original case that we've been discussing, you sanctified the fruit tree, the fruit on the tree, and even though you redeemed it, the sanctity keeps coming back according to Bar Pada, based on your original declaration. So over here, can we not say the same thing? A man's Mekadosh a woman. And again, like we've been discussing yesterday, now continues today, when a man's Mekadosh a woman, so it's Kiddushin. In other words, it affects her to be usher, much like the fruit on the tree. So now when a man is Mekadosh a woman, so can he, at the original point of Kiddushin, not only be Mekadosh now, but also be Mekadosh on a future occasion as well, if and when it deems necessary?
Can a second man do that?
But
can a second man walk to everyone say he has a pruta, and if when you get divorced from this guy, you're going to be
let's just stay right now with this question, because you'll see there are already a number of variables that we're going to be discussing on this issue. So first, let's flesh out the variables on this issue, and then you know we can discuss other variables as well. So I know since she pruta lishav arim labachas is kashli hayom uva achas is kashli laachas is shagar sheich. So one's for now, and one is for post gerish. redemption, meaning, okay, look, I want to, we'll try again after the second time. So, hachanami dava kedushay. So maybe both kedushin will take effect, meaning obviously one now, and then after they get a divorce, so now the second pruta now will kick in, even though after the divorce he didn't do anything. It's based on the original kedusha, but why should that be, that case be any different than our case, at least according to Bar Pada? That is their discussion that they're having. Itar behu Rav Yirmiyah. So you know Rav Yirmiyah is going to get involved because that's the way this setup always works. Rav Yirmiyah is listening with one ear. Rav Yirmiyah is the Rebbe. Rav Yirmiyah is it's an early Amora in Eretz Yisrael. So the and Amar lehu Maikam Medamisun Padanhu lePadan Acherim. And Rav Yirmiyah says that your comparison is not a good comparison. You're comparing where he is redeeming versus where other people are redeeming. Hacham Rav Yochanan, and if the Gemara says, in fact, Rav Yochanan says, Padan hu chosus v'kedushas. Look, if you're the one who's redeeming, so then chosus v'kedushas, so then the kedusha will come back again. But padam acherim ain't chosus v'kedushas. But if other people redeem it, so then the kedusha doesn't come back. The isha, here comes the most critical line of this side of the daf, and the woman, kapadua acherim damya, is like other people redeeming her. Stay with me. I'm going to just finish reading the Gemara, and then we're going to come back and we're going to analyze that line of Gemara. Itmar Nami, I'm Rabbi Ami, I'm Rav Yochanan. Rabbi Ami also quotes Rav Yochanan saying the same thing, which is Lo Shanu Alo Shepadan Hu. This application of Bar Pada is only when he himself redeems it. Ava Padam Achirim in Chosus V'Kedushos. But if other people redeem it, so then the Kedusha doesn't go back. Okay. Number of things to resolve over here. Number of things to clarify. Let me try my best. The Gemara said, first of all, clarifies Bar Pada's halacha, and that is, look, he originally consecrates it, he gives a kedusha, and he says, I wanted to remain in a state of kedusha until it's cut off from the tree. Which means now that after every single time he redeems it, there's going to be a new kedusha that's going to take its place after he redeems it based on his original declaration. To which the Gemara says, that's true, but only if he's the one who redeems it. Okay, now, let's think about this for just one more moment, and let's analyze what just happened. When he originally consecrated it, so he was makdish it. There are two people involved in this transaction. There's he and the base of mikdash. When you're makdish an item, right, not so much a carbon that you bring, but when you give something to the base of mikdash, when you consecrate something to the base of mikdash, so really it's a transaction. I mean, to put it plain and simply, you are the owner, and you're relinquishing your owner, and you're giving ownership up to the Beis HaMikdash. It has sanctity because it's owned by the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash can sell it. But in other words, really, to distill it to what it is, it's simply a transaction between you and the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, you are on one side of the transaction, Beis HaMikdash is on the other side of the transaction. So now, in your original declaration, you say the following. Look, in the two parties of this transaction, here's the terms that I would like. I would like to give it to the Beis HaMikdash, and then, if subsequently I redeem it, I would then like to give it back to the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, as long as the fruit remain exclusively within these two parties of the transaction, it's fair game. Meaning that works. I can be makdish it, redeem it, which means that it comes back to me, but then let it bounce back to the Beis HaMikdash based on my original declaration. So you see, nothing happened to the fruit. It did not nothing happened, but it didn't exit the two parties of the transaction. Fine. If another person comes in and redeems it, so that's it. I now no longer have the control and therefore the ability to reconsecrate it, because it is now left, it is escaped the two exclusive members of the original contractual agreement, me and the Beis HaMikdash. Good? That's how it works in terms of this halacha Bar Pada. It will only come back and be kadosh again only if I'm the one who redeemed it. But if anyone else redeemed it, it therefore is no good. It doesn't work. Now let's go to the case of the woman. And here's now where it gets interesting. In the case of the woman, what happened? I was makdish the woman. So if I was makdish the woman, and then we got a divorce, which, again, in the analogy, means it's comparable to redemption. So then I can't be Makdish her once again. Now, as I say that, think about it now some more, and you say to yourself, sounds pretty comparable. Meaning, once we explain the original halacha bar pada, that because the object never left the two parties of the transaction, therefore I can consecrate it, redeem it, and then reconsecrate it all with my original act. So over here, by the case of the woman, should be the same, right? In other words, I should be able to consecrate her, meaning that's hekdesh, that's kiddushin, and then quote unquote redeem her. Meaning, redeemer, meaning gerushin, and then reconsecrate her, all with the original act. And to which the Gemara says, and again, we go back to now, the critical line of the Gemara, isha kipadua acherim. When the woman gets a divorce, it's like others redeeming her. What does that mean? So over here, there's a ran on today's daf. It's one of the more popular rans. It gets discussed a lot. We get to see it inside. So the Ran writes as follows. I'm going to read the words of the Ran, and he is bothered by this very question. What exactly does that mean when the Gemara says that a woman is like others consecrating? So it is in the Ran, as the lines get wide, it's six lines down. V'isha nami kebadua cherem dami. Lefi, shimiyad shen esgar sheyotze mirshu sabal l'rishusa. When she gets a divorce, she leaves the domain of the husband, and she enters into her own domain. Ve'en kedushin chalan aleha ve'kasheli adra be'isha lepadan hu damya shekeshem she netiot alo lefi she'enam yotzes mershus hekdesh or mershus mirshuso matzel akdeshinu la'achar she'ipadu kach isha zu kevan she'enam yotzes mershus abal or mershus atzma bedinu she'teyo cholis kadesh me'ata afilu she'tiskarish. So now the Ron says, now that we've presented the two cases side by side, the Ron says, if you ask me now, I think it's a perfect parallel. I think that just like in the case of the hektish of the fruit tree, the fruit never left the possession of the two principal parties in the transaction, neither me or the Beis HaMikdash, so too, when a man is makdish a woman, meaning the woman, there are two parties in the transaction. There's me and the woman. I was makdish her, then I quote unquote redeemed her, which means that she went back to her own domain. So why can't I be makdish her again based on my original declaration? Why aren't these two cases identical? And the Ran writes as follows, and again, this Ran is often quoted, but we don't have to quote him. We're going to read him inside. So the Ran says, V'nichali. It's the beginning of the line. It's about eight lines down. The E Matzi Isha Lakadesh Atzma Le'i Shachanam Yidav Yidum Yidam Akdesh Netiyas Mamish. If the way you look at Kiddushin is that the woman is, as, again, now we're talking about herself, meaning as the object of the transaction. So if she is on the other side of the transaction, meaning, I was going to say allowing, but I want to be more careful in the words that I choose. If she herself is creating the transaction, moving herself from her domain over to her husband's domain, so then the Ron says, then the point's taken, then the parallel is a very good parallel. So hachanami davi yadumi demakdash nitiyos mamish. Then the parallel is a perfect parallel. Ela kevan shatorah amar ki yikach ish isha. But the Ran writes over here, and this is really a fundamental Ran in terms of how to view the act of Kiddushin, marriage between a man and a woman, stage one. He says, ki yikach ish isha, when a man takes a woman. So the Ran writes, v'lo amra ki silakach isha l'ish. And it doesn't say that she is giving herself over to the man. Lo kol haymenu shetach nesatz malur shetzabal. So the way the Ran says, the way they view Kiddushin, is that not that she moves herself over from her domain over to his domain. Let's say the Gemara Kiddushin says that instead of making the declaration of Hare At Mikudeshus and Moresus Li, she makes the declaration. So the Gemara Kiddushin says that's nothing. Why is that nothing? Again, the Ran over here explains. Mikemen shehi maskemes kedushin aish, he mevateles da'ata v'rotzona. By her committing herself to the marriage, agreeing to be married, so what does that mean is that basically she makes herself like Hefker. The Ran writes, Umashve nashva etzal abal kedavar shel Hefker. She basically allows possession to be taken. And then what the husband does is the husband takes her into his domain. That is how marriage works, explains the Ran. That's the first stage of marriage, that's Kedushin. Okay, now, think about it, because essentially what the Ran is saying is as follows. When we talk about a transaction, we're generally talking about two parties. When we're talking about marriage, so the Ran is teaching us, it's a big chiddush. The Ran is teaching us that in terms of marriage, it is a transaction that involves really one party. One active party in the transaction. And that is a husband. What the woman is doing is allowing herself to be taken into the marriage, but it's the husband who's doing the active role of the marriage. So now the Ran says, based on this, wonderful. Meaning, now you understand why the Gemara rejects the parallel between the case of Netios and the case of the marriage. In the case of the Netios, there are two active participants in the transaction. There's the person who owns the field, and then there's the Beis HaMikdash. The person who owns the field, he's giving it over to the Beis HaMikdash, who's receiving it. So there's a giver and there is a receiver. In the case of the woman, no. In the case of the woman, there's only one party involved in the transaction, and that is the man. And now, after the divorce, what happens? The woman is now going to become the owner of herself. But she was not an active participant in the original transaction. And that's why, says the Ran, this is not similar to the case of the Netios. And that's why he can't, from the point of origination, go ahead and say, I'm going to be Mekadosh you now, I'm going to be Mekadosh you after the divorce, because her redemption, quote-unquote, meaning her divorce, is going to now introduce a new element, and that is, she is going to now become an active participant in a transaction that she was not at the point of origination. Right. So that's why that's a very good point. And that's the if I could just read a little bit more in the Ran. So Hilkachinanu Danim Kedushin Mitzad Isha and Mitzad Baal. When it comes to Kedushin, it is strictly from the perspective of the husband. Olagabe Baal Kepa Dumachir and Dami. Now, from the perspective of the husband, once they get a divorce, it's like others redeem her. In this case, the others is if you're following this discussion. I know it's very tricky, but if you're following the discussion, the others is the woman. Meaning she's being introduced at the point of divorce. She was not a participant, an active participant, at the point of the marriage. So, Alex, the Ran over here is raising your issue. So good. So now that the parallel is no good, so the Ran just now wonders out loud, so why not conclude therefore, meaning Rav Oshi asked a question, can you or can you not give her two prutas and marry her twice at the very beginning? Meaning once now and once after the gerushin. So now, once we destroy the parallel, so why doesn't the Gemara just go the other direction? Why doesn't the Gemara just simply say, okay, good? And the answer is no. Well, why doesn't the Gemara just simply say no? So delo chayla mishum delo dami nami legamre da ha chayisha gamkein mach neses atzma l'rishuso. Alex, you almost exactly like the way the Ran said it, and that is that on the other hand, she does go into his domain. Now, in other words, there is some role that she takes that takes place from her standpoint. I mean, it's okay. Meaning, that's exactly what is unclear from the perspective of Rav Oshi. Meaning, she has a very limited role in her active participation in this Kedushin. But maybe that's enough so that we could suggest that, yeah, maybe her limited active role would be enough to allow the man to, quote-unquote, marry her twice. So the Ran says that's why I don't think it's comparable. So, but just again, a very important discussion in the Ran in terms of how to view Kedushin. Kedushin, there really is only one, again, You could argue the point, but and the Ran in fact himself does, but the way the Ran is viewing Kiddushin is that there's only one transactor in the act of Kiddushin. It's the man. The man says, Hareid Mekudesh Esli. The woman is allowing herself to be taken by the man. She's accepting the Kiddushin, but she's not an active participant in the actual transaction. And that is the way the Ran understands the Gemara's distinction between the case of the Makdish Nati versus the case of the act of Kiddushin.
So there is Kinyan or there is no Kinyan?
Of course there's Kinyan. But generally speaking, Kinyan involves two active participants. I'm giving and you're receiving. Here in the case of marriage, the Ran says, not so much. It's not that she's giving herself over to the husband. She's allowing the husband to take her. Okay, good. That's an important discussion in the Ran. It's very fundamental. When you learn Kiddushin, so you're going to hear this Ran a number of times, but now you get to see it inside today. Okay, the rest of today's daf. We are at the Mishnah on Lamed Amud Aleph, and just one introductory note for the rest of today's daf and tomorrow's daf, and the day after that. And Lamed Beis as well. Okay, and the word of introduction is a very easy one. Okay, a neder is where I accept a vow upon myself. Now, when we have an acceptance of a vow, so obviously there are going to be words that I say, and there's going to be meanings to those words. Okay, what meanings do we turn to? So the answer is Lashon B'nei Adam, the way that people generally understand how those words are meant, and not based on my interpretation or some other way that we could analyze the words. It follows Lashon B'nei Adam. And you're going to see at the end of today's shiur that Lashon B'nei Adam may not even be the Torah's definition of what the word means. Meaning the Torah may have a particular definition of the word, but that's not going to affect the neder. What the neder will be affected by is what is the common definition of what people meant. So a lot of these Mishnahs and Gemaras that we're about to see right now, so they're going to sound a little strange to us because it's not necessarily how we talk. And maybe, in other words, if there is a more generally accepted definition now than it was back then, so maybe we would, a lot of these halachas would be fluid and change based on what is the normal definition of what words mean. That's basically the point that the Gemara is going to be making over the next 3 days, starting now. And so here's the Mishnah. I know them Yordei Hayam. So let's say I make an ed against Yordei Hayam. Meaning, I had enough with sea people, okay? And I don't want to be involved. I guess you could think of pirates, you could think of whatever. In other words, but the seafarers, they don't interest me. And not only do they not interest me, I'm making a neder against them. I'm not going to be getting benefit from them. So, muta b'yoshe yabasha. So, land lovers are obviously not including your neder. So anyone who is who loves the terra, who settles comfortably on the land, so obviously he's not including your neder, and your neder only includes seafarers. So miyoshe yabasha. Muta. Hanoda miyoshe yam muta biyoshe muta biyoshe yabasha miyoshe yabasha. Aser miyorde hayam shiyorde hayam bechlal yoshe yabasha. However, I make a neder from yoshe yabasha, so then I'm going to prohibit myself even to yorde hayam. Why? Because yorde hayam are included in yoshe yabasha. So lo ke elu shehochem miakol yafo. And then the Mishnah puts in one more clause, and that is as follows. Now we said that if you make a neder in seafarers, so you made a neder includes all seafarers. What is a seafarer? Meaning the definition. Gemara says, not somebody who takes a casual trip from the city of Akko to the city of Yafo. I don't know, by boat? It's a ferry. I don't know how long that is. Ela Kamisha Dark Lafarish. It means somebody who goes out to sea for a long period of time. Okay, so there was a qualifier at the end of the Mishnah, and that qualifier was going on the first point of the Mishnah and the second point of the Mishnah, and that's going to be subject to a debate in the Gemara. Rav Papa, Rav Acha, Bari, Rav Ika, Chad Masni Aresha, V'Chad Masni Aseifa. Now, Manda Ni Aresha, Masni Hachi. Now, if you understand that last clause of the Mishnah to be going on the Resha, Here's how to read the Mishnah. If I make a neder, my neder is I'm not having anything to do with any of the seafarers because I've had it with them. And so I'm making a neder against them. So you're prohibited from Yorda Yam, but of course you're going to be Mutar Yoshe Yabasha. So anyone who lives on the land is considered Yoshe Yabasha, and obviously not include my neder. Haba Yorda Yamasa. But then obviously that your neder will prohibit those people who are seafarers. Velo Ke'elu. And now, that last clause of the Mishnah, if it's going on the Reisha, what it presents is now is a kula. It's a leniency. Velo Ke'elu, top of Lamed Amud Beis. Ha'ochim Ya'akul Lefi Liyafo, de Halen Yoshvei Yabashaninu. And not people who take the ferry to go from Akko to Yafo. That's not considered seafarers. That's considered Yoshvei Yabasha. That's not considered somebody who spends a lot of his time out in the ocean. Ela kemisha darkan lafaresh. It's talking about somebody who's going on long trips on boats. That is how it is to be understood. If that's true now, so what that means is that the last clause of the Mishnah is serving as a leniency. When you step foot on a boat, that person is not included in your neder. It has to be somebody who goes on a boat and is going to go on a long journey. Only those people are included in your neder. Now, umandit masniyat seifa. Now, the other way to learn the Mishnah is that last clause is going on the Seifa and Masnihachi. And this is how the Mishnah is going to read. If I make a neder from people who are on the land, Asur B'yor De'ayam, then it's going to be prohibited from those people who not only are on the land, but also Yor De'ayam as well. V'lo be'elo ochem ya'akol yafo b'vad, ela filo nami shedark lefaresh, hovi sofali yabasha salik. Even people who are going on a long journey, you can't live out on the water. You'll go out for a long time, but eventually you got to port. You got to come back to land. So when I make the nether of, I'm making a nether against people who are living on the land, that is all inclusive. Now, I don't know how you're going to exist, by the way, because now you basically made an... Right, you're basically making a nether against everybody. I don't know how you're going to exist, and... It's fine. It's a fair point. But the point that the Gemara is saying is now, and then the last clause of the Mishnah is, it includes everybody. Yorda Yabasha even includes people who take the ferry, but even goes one step further. It even includes people going on long trips. They're also eventually going to come back to land, and therefore, it is an all-inclusive net that includes everybody. Obviously, if that's the way you learn the Mishnah, so then that last line represents a chumrah, not a kula. Fine. So, and the Ron points out that given the two options, and the Gemara doesn't tell us which is the correct way to do it, so the Ron quotes the Rashba, and the Rashba says that we're going to be machmir, and we're going to learn the Mishnah in the more stringent, in the stringent way. Hainode meroe chama. Next example. Let's say I make a neder, and I say, I'm making a neder against anyone who sees the sun. Ostensibly, what you're saying is, I'm making a neder against anyone who can see. But then the Mishnah confuses us because the Mishnah says, Asar HaFesumim. Well, then your neder is going to include even blind people as well. Now that's hard to understand. Meaning your neder was against people who could see. Whatever you have against those people who have vision. But the Mishnah then confuses us by saying, oh, but you know what? But blind people also include that neder. Stay tuned. Shelo niskavin ze el mishachama roen osan. Because again, we're talking about how words are commonly understood. And when you say the words roe chama, what you meant is not that they see the sun, but rather sun sees them. Sun sees them, so that's talking about everyone on this earth, even the people who can't see the sun, but the sun can see them. So my taima, so the Gemara goes on and just gives one brief explanation. Midilo kamar min haro'in. You don't say min haro'in, focusing on the act of seeing. Lefichach, I'm sorry, lafuke dagim v'ubrim. So what you're doing now is you're excluding fish and fetuses, meaning you're now excluding a category, a group of people. But you'll notice, by the way, fish are not a group of people. Well, I'll comment on that in just a moment. But in other words, anyone that is not seen by the sun, now fish are underwater, and I understand sunlight does go through the water. So I guess what we're going to have to look at it, the way we're going to look at it, is that, that is visible, right, outwardly visible by the sun. However, we're going to have to say it. But the fish and the fetuses are not seen by the sun, so they're not included in your neder. But anyone living on the earth, even those who can't see the sun, are included because you said roe achama, and you didn't say the words roin. Interesting. The Gemara said in its very brief explanation that fish are not included in your neder. I could have made the argument fish were never included in your neder. Meaning, what did you say? I'm making a neder against roe chama. One could have imagined that roe chama is just, you were just talking about a group of people, meaning humans. And meanwhile, the Gemara says, well, no, it excludes fish. Fish are not included in your neder, meaning that categorically, who is subject to the neder? Humans, animals. Right? It's. All right, Tosfos points this out. It's the see the Tosfos, the thin lines of Tosfos. So miu betvuas uperos v'chol davar she'ein bo ruach chayim shari af agav de chama roa son dekevin shenitzka roe chama mashman dafka balei chayim she'asuyim liros hachama. So interesting. So Tosfos says, by virtue of the fact you said roe chama, even though the focus was on that which the sun sees, but we're talking about creatures that have the ability to see. So it includes all creatures that have the ability to see, both humans and animals. Tosfos points out, it's not talking about plants. Plants don't see. Now they don't have vision the way we have vision, the way animals have vision. So it's interesting. Roe chama includes even the animal kingdom as well. Okay, let's continue in the Mishnah.
Is it good? Just one question. Is it Uber ever emo?
Yeah, machlok is whether it is or it isn't. But again, we just follow. Yeah, in other words, whatever halachic realities may or may not be true doesn't apply to nadar. Again, the rule is it's the most basic rule, which is really guiding our gemaras, and that is lashon b'nei adam. It's what people generally mean when they say hanoda mishochrei harosh. Sorry, mishochrei harosh. So let's say I make an neder against people with black hair. Okay, black-haired people are just, I don't want anything to do with them, right? Blondes, redheads, fine, but not people with black hair. So asar bikarachin, ubale sevos. So your neder will include even people who have no hair, even though they don't technically qualify under your neder, and even people who have white hair. Once again, they're included as well in your neder. Umuter benoshim uviktanim. However, when it comes to women, it comes to children, so then your neder will not include them. Shenikram shchorei rosh ala anoshim. Shchorei rosh, again, lashon b'nei adam. The way that people generally speak, shchorei rosh just simply means men. Men, even if that particular man doesn't have hair, even if that particular man's hair is no longer black, it's now white, doesn't matter. Shchorei rosh, loosely defined, generally is defined as men. My time, and the Gemara gives again a very brief explanation. Midelo kami mi ba'le se'ar. Because it doesn't say ba'le se'ar, meaning the focus is not on the actual hair itself, it's the head of the person. Meaning, and as the Gemara is about to explain, let's see the Gemara coming up. Because when it comes to men, so men sometimes have their hair exposed. Meaning the reason why Shchor Rosh is an aphorism that describes men is because men, you could see their hair. However, Vizimnan de Migle Rashaihu, sometimes their hair is covered, sometimes their hair is exposed. Aval Nashim la Olamichsu. But women, their hair is always covered. So when I say those people whose hair I could see. So again, the general understanding is men, not women. Women have their hair covered. So uketanim laola miglu. And when it comes to children, children always have their hair exposed. So in other words, the it is loosely defined as people whose hair is sometimes covered, sometimes uncovered, otherwise known as men. Finishing up, hanoder min hayeludim. So now I make a neder. Okay, and I guess this is kind of like a generational neder, meaning I've had it with those people who were born already. Meaning that's old generation. I'm only interested in the new generation. So mutter bin noladin. So then his neder will apply to anyone who was born already, but anyone who will be born post his neder is now going to be not included as someone he's going to get hana from. So min hanoladim, and it goes the other way as well. if I make a neder from those people who will be born, meaning I'm not interested in future. I don't want change. I don't want reform. I want things to be the way it was. I'm only going to deal with people who are born already. So I'm just trying to give some sort of motive, understanding of why the person would make such an neder. So also mina yeludin. So then, because he says min hanoladin, he is prohibited from those who were born already. Meaning, according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, the word yeludim is a reference strictly to the past, not to the future. The word noladin can go either way. Noladin can be people who will be born, and can also be people who are born already. Okay. Rabbi Meir Matir Af Yeludim. Rabbi Meir says no. He even includes the Yeludim as well. The language of Rabbi Meir is a little tricky. Even the Yeludim are going to be mutter, which means that those who are born are going to be mutter, and those who will be born are going to be mutter as well. Which the Gemara then is going to ask, according to Rabbi Meir, so who did your neder affect? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that question. And the Chachamim say no. You know what this neder means? The neder means people who have who multiply, who procreate. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain what that means as well. So the Gemara says, now let's just go back to Rav Meir's position. Rav Meir said that when he says the word noladim, he'll be mutter to everybody, those who were born and those who will be born. To which the Gemara then says, okay, and then what? What happened to the neder? Chasur mechzer v'hachi ketani. So the Gemara says, what is happening over here is that we're missing part of the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is to be understood as follows. Hanodim ne'yaludim mutter b'noladim. A person who makes a neder from those who are already born. So that means that anyone who is born already, from the time that he declares his neder, is going to be prohibited, and anyone who will be born is going to be mutter. Okay. Min anoladim aser biyaludim. And if he makes a statement that I'm not going to get hana from noladim, he's aser not only for those who will be born, but also those who were born. Rabbi Meir Omer, af anodim min anoladim mutter biyaludim, ki hechi denodim min ayudim mutter biyaludim. Okay. And now with this little extra piece of Mishnah, this is the way we're supposed to understand the Mishnah, Rav Meir is just simply giving us a foil. Just like when I said the word yeludim, it only refers to the past, not to the future, so too when I say noladim, it only refers to the future and not to the past. Good. That's the way the Gemara says we understand Rav Meir. Amle Rav Papa Labai Lamemer de Noladim de Misyal de Mashma Lamiata. So the Gemara says now, let's think about this a little bit more. We have two terms over here. We have the word Yeludim, which the Mishnah says is unequivocally a reference to the past. And we have the word Noladim, which, debatable, whether it's exclusively for the future or may also include the past. The Gemara says, you mean to tell me the noladin the misyal de mashma that the word noladin is a reference to the future? Elamiata shnei banacha hanoladim lach be'eretz Mitzrayim. Consider the following: that when Yaakov talks to his son Yosef, he says the two sons who were noladim. Now that was a reference to Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe are right there in the room; they aren't going to be born. They already were born. The Torah's usage over there is the word noladim. Hachanami di is yaldin, who? The elamai di yaladu mashma lamiata dichsiv. So then clearly the word nolad is talking about the past. The Gemara says, I'll give you another example, Tanakh. Elamiata dichsiv hine ben nolad lebeis David, Yoshiyahu shemo. There is going to be a son who is nolad lebeis David, and his name is Yoshiyahu. Hachanami dahava. Now the word nolad over there, do you mean to understand that that word nolad is talking about the past? V'adayim menashe laba. Now that is a nevuah, that's a prophecy about Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu is the son of Menashe. Menashe is not even born at the time of this declaration of the nevuah, and yet the word nolad is used. So ela mashma hachi mashma hachi. So the Gemara says, so what's clear? When the Torah, meaning Torah Tanakh, when the word nolad is used in Tanakh, it can really go in either direction. It could be a reference to the past, which is clear by Yaakov in his discussion with Yosef. It could be talking about the future, which is clear from the Pasuk in Malachim Aleph. So the word Nola can go in either direction. And to which the Gemara says, good. But when it comes to a person making a neder, even if Tanakh gives us a definition, that's not how it's not going to be what affects the neder. What affects the neder? The Gemara here says it. We go after what people generally assume to be the definition of the word, even though the word that way the way we use it may not even be the same in definition as when Tanakh used it. So it's fascinating. Meaning, you know, there is language is a living language, and there's always going to be, you know, right, we see, you know, in the course of our own lifetime, we see how words, you know, change over the course of time and have different innuendo over the course of time. And even if it deviates from that which Tanakh presents as his definition, when it comes to Nedarim, Hochanach Halashem Ne'adam. And the reason why is very straightforward. Because when you're making a Neder, it's based on what people generally assume to be the going definition. That's what we're going to assume you intended as well. Because when you're making a Neder, intent is everything. And the general understanding is, unless you want to clarify, of course, that your intent is what is generally accepted as the definition. And lastly, just to finish up, the Gemara of Chachamim Omer Lo Niskavim Zeh Mimish Darko Lehiva Leid. The Chachamim say that when you make a declaration of No Ladim, you're making an eder against whom? You're making an eder against those who procreate in the usual fashion. Lafuke Mai, Lafuke Davim VaOfos. When it comes to fish, when it comes to birds, so they don't procreate in the quote unquote in the traditional sense. They spawn, they lay eggs, so they're not noladim. They're not having live births, so they're not included in your neder. So your neder includes basically all of the human population, most of the animal population because they live birth, but your neder is not going to be inclusive of birds and fish. So I guess from that point going forward, so you'll enjoy fish and poultry and but not animals, and you're not benefiting from humans as well. I the larger question, which you know I've already asked once this morning, is that a lot of these nedarim are all inclusive and include all of humanity, and it's very hard time just imagining how you can exist in this world if you're not going to be benefiting from any person living on this world. It's just hard to imagine. But again, we're just single-minded, and just in terms of the understanding of the Gemara is just telling us that when you make a neder, you follow the normal definition of what the neder is, and we're just going through numerous examples of this principle.
Right.
In other words, it's a neder. I understand. It's a neder sheyachol amod bo. It's like you can't live like that. And generally speaking, it doesn't work. Okay, I do get it. Anyway, let's just quickly recap, and we'll finish up. So we finished. Let's recap the Gemara's discussion today. The beginning of the discussion wanted to strike a parallel between the case of the tree and where you were makdish it multiple times from the point of origination, and compare that to a woman, and maybe a man could be makdish a woman multiple times from the point of origination. And the Gemara says the cases are not the same because there's a difference between when you're the one who redeems and when others are redeemed. And the Gemara tells us that when in the case of marriage, and then when the woman divorces, it's like others redeeming. And we spent a lot of time this morning on the Ron explaining how marriage works and why when the woman gets a divorce, it's like others redeeming. From that point going forward, the Mishnah gave us numerous examples of when I make a neder, it follows Lashon B'nei Adam, it follows what people generally mean. And then, just example after example, we're going to do this again tomorrow, example after example of what do people generally mean when they say. And then we saw numerous examples over the course of today.